Welcome to the Addiction Solution Podcast. I'm Michelle Dunbar. Enjoy listening and watching as addiction experts Mark Sheeran and I cover controversial as well as helpful topics on addiction, how to move past it, and other related subjects. As two of the co-founders of the Freedom Model, Mark and I will give you a completely new perspective on the topics that matter to you. We will take to task the Recovery Society's lies and misinformation and replace them with facts, research, and the methods to move on from addiction struggles without 12-step meetings, rehabs, and the shackles of endless recovery. Let's escape the treatment and recovery trap together and learn to be free. Welcome to the truth. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Addiction Solution. I'm Michelle Dunbar.
And I'm Mark Sheeran, and we co-wrote with our colleague Stephen Slate, The Freedom Model for Addictions, Escape the Treatment and Recovery Trap. All right.
This is episode 287. Just so everybody knows that there are literally 286 episodes before this. Only about 150, I think, are here on YouTube, if you're watching on YouTube. But you can see the entire or listen to all of them in Spotify or on, I believe, on our website, on thefreedommodel.org, we have the entire listing of them. We did our first episode, I think, in 2018.
Yeah.
2018. So we've been doing this a while.
Yeah. Long time.
A long time.
We love what we do. And today we're taking a comment, right?
Yes. We're going to take a comment that we got in one of our videos on YouTube that just came in this morning. And I'm going to read it to you, and it's a common one, and it's basically about, you know, isn't it better for poor people, right? People in poor areas to
third world.
This is specifically about Central America, to have some place to go. Isn't it better with AA? Let me read it to you. I work in Central America in very poor areas for suffering alcoholics, street drinkers. There are no government programs, no boutique treatment centers. The hospitals don't accept alcoholics seriously. The only place to go for someone with no money is AA. Church pastors may try and help out, but most are not too sympathetic. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. So AA it is. There are AA groups all over, especially in the poor neighborhoods. People are sobering up with the 12 steps and the spiritual program. I have no clue the percentages, but if I had to guess, it's below 30%. Fact is, you'll never know because no one keeps count. Well, that's not exactly true, but okay. Question, would you say these poor folks are leading lesser lives having sobered up in AA? Are they deluded? Would they be better off not going to AA and continuing trying to stop drinking on their own? I'm just curious. Can I qualify something? Mm-hmm. I want to say the whole premise of alcoholic is the problem here. I get the question. Go ahead.
Yeah. The issue is that if your premise starts with that there is a compelled behavior, that becomes the problem. So the other thing is, it's interesting because there's parallels between how AA started and a third world country. And let me explain what that is. So the reason that AA took root, this weird cult, this disease cult, right? The reason it took root is because American society at that time was in a place of real turmoil when it came to alcohol. It was just getting over prohibition and the whole mob-run sort of alcohol industry. The second wave of the Industrial Revolution was happening, where men were no longer at home. They were rather at bars. After their shifts, they would go from these factories, they would go to bars. And so there's a women's movement, temperance movement, that was run by women in society. And so it was this sort of abstinence-based push that it was immoral to drink and that men were no longer being dads, responsible fathers. And there were other factors that were coming in, much which had to do with the understanding of disease and bacterias and viruses, and these things we were starting to understand these things. My point is that there can be a lot of societal factors that play into beliefs that this person is talking about the end product of the argument, and they're right. not looking at the root. And I knew that's what you were thinking about.
That
you were
I
could see the wheel spinning. And if you start with the premise being false, it's very hard to come to a conclusion that makes any sense. So in third world, if you believe that there is a compelled behavior, you have street people, and you don't have money or any quote unquote programs, well, then AA becomes the natural shift. But if we back up and we say, well, addiction doesn't exist as a compelled behavior, then AA literally right at its root doesn't need to even exist.
Right. Right. The other thing I want to say is, you also come from a premise that these people are street people because of their addiction, right? That they're living on the streets because they're addicted. That's a belief from all over the world. And it's never been, look at being poor does not mean you're going to have an alcohol and drug problem. Okay. Because you have an alcohol and drug problem doesn't mean that you end up being poor. These things, there's a weak correlation at best when you look at real data.
Yeah.
And so there's this idea, which is also a wrong premise, that we have to solve the addiction to so these people aren't street people anymore.
And,
right?
And it goes the other way, that we have to solve the street problem so they don't turn into alcoholics. And again, we're using the terminology of compelled behavior like it's all this causal situation.
Exactly.
This is why we had to write an entire chapter on causes versus reasons. When we talk in terms of human beings being these passive victims of circumstance, and we start with words like safety nets and public programs and these, I'm not against all of those things,
no.
but when it comes to a false premise, I am,
right?
Because it actually ends up trapping them in treatment systems. And that's why we call our book, the tagline, Escape the Treatment and Recovery Trap. So it's really, really hard for people to understand what we are talking about, because they're believers in the mythology that circumstance and or a non-existent disease and compelled behavior is at work here. And if you start from that place,
yeah,
every part of the analysis becomes infected by the falsity of it. Exactly. And you never come to any conclusion. What conclusion you come up with is, well, I guess AA is the only way. You
right.
know?
It's better than nothing. And that's really where he was going with, you think it's better for people to just be drunk laying on the streets.
Right.
Than going to AA. And so my answer was, and it's still in this very limited context, it sounds a little trite, but my answer is you have to go backwards. You have to do your own research, because I can tell you based on this research I've seen and our experience, our vast experiences the last 40 years, that there are many more people in Central America who stop heavy substance use on their own. Okay. And so the question becomes, do the people that stop on their own have a better quality of life, an equal quality of life, or a lesser quality of life than those who go to AA and basically live a lifestyle of, they're still living a lifestyle that's addiction, but it's addiction and recovery. So do the people who stop on their own and move on have a better quality of life than the people who go and stay in recovery for the rest of their lives, believing that they have this disease that can strike them at any moment and that they have to do certain protocols to keep themselves sober one day at a time?
And because they're not measuring the people that just get over the problem naturally, we don't know if the statistic you're giving with the people that go to AA is actually beneficial or not. So if you come into it not understanding the fundamental truth that the vast amount of people worldwide do change their lives, and do have problem-solving capability and do are self-efficacious in regards to changing habits, if that gets taken out of the equation, well, then AA does seem like the only route, even though it may seem like its success rate is low. You don't know if the vast majority of those people would have gotten over the problem or not. We just emotionally look at the streets and say those people are doomed forever. Now, we may have a population that we're looking at in third world or in American cities or rural America that's really, really sad.
Yeah.
Okay. Sad, drunk, high, in withdrawal, in and out of withdrawal, in and out of clinics, all these sorts of things. And that population does exist, and it exists worldwide. But when we start to compare it inadequately with half the information, what we don't know is if you're getting, let's say, 5 to 30% of a success rate with AA, would you have gotten a 10 to 40% of people moving on with their lives in that same population if you did nothing?
If you left them alone.
So we can't go back in time pre-AA because in a lot of cases in third world, that wasn't measured. We don't know what those, but in America it was. So we know that, for instance, in colonial America, when America was first founded, there's books written about this, actually,
right,
where they looked at towns and they did historical context. And you can look at it and see that people drank younger, drank daily, drank more per capita. They actually knew the drinking rates because a still and a bar and that sort of thing was extremely important to the culture. And we know the volumes that they drank, and yet they had no problem. They drank more, younger, more consistently, and yet they had less social problems. And we know this to be true. So how can that be true if the molecule of alcohol actually creates all these social problems? Maybe what's true is the belief about the power of alcohol and the context that we believe it in and the constructs we create around it are what are at play here. So when this person is talking about, you know, hey, these alcoholics, street drinkers, I mean, you know, what they're implying is these people are fucked for life.
Yep.
And AA is the only hope. That may not be true. Now, I don't know about their culture. I'd have to study it, but you'd have to have a control group to see natural remission rates first, to see if AA does worse or better. But if we emotionally look out in the street in a snapshot, or we know that we have that guy who drinks on the corner every day and we hone in on that guy and we say, see, that's reality, Mark. These people are dying every day. Well, some are. But there's also a guy on the next street corner that just got on with his life that you're not measuring. So these things are just horribly ignored and misrepresented in statistics. Luckily, we in America have large studies that have looked at all these things, longitudinal studies with massive numbers of people. And we know that people get over their problems quite regularly.
And why, you know, we're talking about obviously AA and drinkers. And I think there's also an assumption, and wrongly so, that everybody that's on the street is a substance user, right? Like some people are mentally ill. And so what do you do with those people in your country? What happens to those people? Why does there need to be a separate system, right, for drinkers than there is for the other people that are homeless? And we know from research that there are a great number of homeless people who want it that way. They prefer their life out on the street. That is their lifestyle of preference. And so do we force those people not to be on the street? Like, so you're talking about an entire problem for many countries. It is a problem in the United States as well, that we see like some communities have a large population of homeless, and to assume that all of them have substance use problems is not accurate. It's probably maybe a little higher percentage in the population at large, but it's definitely not as much as people might think. And so, you know, why would you address the substance users any differently than addressing the homeless population at large. Like it requires a certain amount of personal judgment. So what you're also talking about really, and this came to my mind, is there are heavy substance users who prefer the street lifestyle, right?
Oh yeah.
And so do you force these people to go to AA? Like, we look in from the outside, and because we don't want that lifestyle and we can't imagine living it anymore, because both Mark and I had little stints of that where, honest to God, I preferred not having to be somewhere when I was a heavy substance user. I chose that lifestyle. I got out of it, right? But so now you're talking about, because I wouldn't live that way, they shouldn't either. And they can't possibly be choosing it.
Yeah. So the fabric of social problems are very complex, because what you're dealing with is macro concepts and constructs that might be false. For instance, that the disease of addiction exists. That's a false construct. And then in that, you also have, I am caused to behave because of poverty. I'm caused to behave because I'm an addict. And these things then might rule the life of that individual, but may not with many other individuals that look the same, that are doing the same things. So then my point is, these things become so incredibly complex,
right,
that when you make blanket statements like AA is the answer, it borders on ridiculous. Because it's not the answer that everybody wants it to be. And it actually may be harming people. Now, we know in America, because we are the sort of, we distribute treatment throughout the world, ours is an abysmal failure for 80 years. And it's been an absolute tragedy what has happened with millions of lives being destroyed by treatment and recovery. And throughout the last 8 decades. So we know that we have more treatment today. We spend more money on it, and we have the highest overdose rates of any time in our history. You'd think that there'd be some sort of net win. There hasn't been.
No.
And we're going to just double down on it again, because it makes money, frankly, on a vulnerable population. And when you have an affluent country, you can do shit like that. I don't think that any of this that we're talking about, and we say this in every single podcast, is ill-intentioned. I think there are bad actors. I think there are scumbags in the industry. There are. It attracts them, believe me. But the vast majority of people are just following a narrative because they believe that somebody is compelled to, that the loss of control exists. If you eliminate the loss of control mythology, which we do in our book over and over and over and over again, there's no basis for treatment anymore. All of a sudden, it becomes a social problem that is addressed at the individual level and their belief system. And then you find solutions really quickly. And AA isn't a part of that. Neither is treatment. Neither, you have detox, which deals with the physical side. And then you have individual choice. And it really clears things up very quickly. The freedom model is the answer. It is the solution to addiction, because it allows the individual to choose for themselves.
And that's what I was thinking as you were talking, and I went back to thinking about this question. I mean, what you're really asking me is, it was a very loaded question, right? And it's, so I heard the attitude of, so do you think it's better for people to just die on the street? I can't even answer that question, quite frankly. And I'll tell you why, because I don't know what that person wants. Now, if somebody is seeking help, then I think the help that they should get should be the truth. Okay. I don't think it's better to go someplace and be lied to and scared, and taught to fear something that isn't real in order to quote unquote help you. No, I don't think that's better. Do I think that there's a certain amount of camaraderie that's built in AA groups and the rooms of AA and things like that? Sure, right? I was a part of it for a long period of time, so I saw it. But I think the negatives far outweigh the positives, simply because you're learning a lie. And you're basing your entire lifestyle on that lie, which we see here in the United States, prolonged struggle has higher rates of dangerous binge usage, higher rates of
overdose,
higher rates of mental health, additional mental health issues. If you believe you're powerless in one area of life, it's not a big stretch to believe you're powerless in many others, right? Like that tends to infect many other parts of your life, and your whole life becomes about, I am an alcoholic and everything I touch turns to shit because of it.
It's really insidious, the amount of virtue signaling that people do when it comes to this topic, and they don't even realize they're doing it. There isn't anybody that, unless they're a sadist, that sits around and wishes harm on people, right? I mean, or themselves.
We certainly don't.
Yeah. I mean, I think that people are just horribly misinformed and believing constructs that in reality don't even exist. And I always go back to loss of control, because that's the foundation. If you believe that there are people who cannot stop themselves from doing something, then that really justifies third-party intervention. And that becomes that slippery slope of, you know, incarcerating people beyond their will and getting mental health proxies to take over their life and all this kind of really tyrannical shit that happens in the treatment industry every day. And people lose their rights to their children, their professional licenses, all these things because they like to get high. And so the downstream effects of mythology, like Michelle is talking about, they're not small.
No.
The net negative results are massive when it comes to the treatment industry. So it's not a neutral experience. It's not this sort of feel good. Well, you know, these are diseased people.
Well, there's
that
nothing better for these people.
Yeah, the best we're going to do is a little bit of Suboxone for life, and they're always going to crave heroin. And this is what we need. We need more clinics and more Suboxone clinics, and we need more of this and more of that.
More support,
because we need to prop up these weak people, these hapless victims of drugs. And that narrative, think about, I'm saying it sort of in a shitty way, because it's horrible to teach people this, because it's not true. To her point, it's just not true.
Right.
It's not factually correct. So you go down these paths. We lived it. You go down these paths, and they're horrible paths. There's no hope there.
Well, and
no answer.
We were going to talk today a little bit about Britney Spears got a recent DUI. There's not a lot of information about it, which I'm glad about, quite frankly, because it'd be nice if that poor woman could be left alone.
Yeah, let her live her life.
Yeah. I mean, I don't advocate people driving drunk, obviously. I don't think that's a good plan. And if you break the law, you should have to face the consequences if you make those choices. What I worry about is this idea that, oh, she needs to go back to rehab and she needs to be
sanctioned from her money.
From her money and her children and all of these things. Like she was basically incarcerated by people for her own good, working for them so they could get rich for a period of several years. Right. And so she finally gets her own freedom. And I can just see it. I can see the wheels turning, you know, see, she got freedom. And look at how weak she is. Look at how diseased she is that this happened. Of course, this was going to happen. And it's like, well, no, maybe she just made some shitty choices on a night. Or maybe this happened because she expected it to.
Right.
Right. Because of the teachings, because of the idea that once I start drinking, I can't stop. And then I make stupid choices and I do stupid things and alcohol takes me over. And none of that is true. None of it is true. And so the way to help people solve their problem is to show them they're never out of control. And once you open that can of worms, that you're not out of control and you start to recognize it, it's quite remarkable that no matter what, you realize, oh, I chose that and that and that.
Yeah.
And that means I don't have to choose that ever again.
Yeah. That's where freedom, the freedom of the human mind takes over.
Yeah.
And it's a really remarkable and beautiful thing to watch. We get to watch it every day that we coach people, you know.
Me too. And
it's the reason why with the Freedom Model, we only have to do 3 90-minute sessions and then people get it.
Right.
Because the natural order is truth, right? So if you give people actual facts, even if the facts initially seem scary, you know, and the fact of, can I really moderate? That may terrify somebody that's tried to moderate many times and failed, an example. And so there's a huge push to never discuss moderation as a good example.
Right.
And we hit those things head on and say, of course, anybody can moderate if they truly want to do that. And if they have the facts. And that may seem terrifying. The truth can seem terrifying, but here's what's wild. Once you get the truth and all the facts that build out the truth and you are knowledgeable of the facts, it builds a new construct of empowerment. Instead of a construct of powerlessness, disease, fear, you know, and this idea that I can never stop myself and I need to be propped up and I am weak and I am broken, we go over here and we say, no, you're empowered. You were born with everything you needed to ever get over the problem. You are self-efficacious by your nature. You have a positive drive principle that we talk about in chapter 7. You have autonomy. You have free will. You can moderate if you want to. And all these things that you think about drugs and alcohol are not true and are standing in your way from your freedom to think for yourself. And if you feel at all that you can't think for yourself or advocate for yourself when it comes to drugs and alcohol, that's the level to which you have mythology guiding you away from true freedom. So however much fear you carry, however much you feel that you need meetings or some external means, those are all gauges to say that's how much mythology you're carrying. Because once you get rid of the mythology, there's no need for any external thing. There's just you and your choice.
You know, this is a perfect segue, because a really common comment that we get is, oh, I wish I had known I could have just stopped. Like, thank God you told me I could have just stopped. Like a lot of 12-step people will come on and say things like that. And my question always is to them, how did you stop? I usually get crickets. How did you stop? Oh, I went to meetings. I didn't ask you that. I asked you, how did you stop? Now, sometimes people went to detox, right? But still, it required the choice to go to stop and go to detox. Because I can tell you, after running retreats for several years and studying this, the vast majority, like rehabs, do you know how many people get kicked out of rehab for getting high? Lots, more than half in some cases, okay? When people want to get high or drunk, they do. Okay. And so my question will be again, for everyone watching this who is in recovery, how did you stop? You made the choice and you did. I mean, when it comes right down to it, that's how it's done. That is how it's done. So when you go to a cult and they make you believe that they're the reason you stopped, even though you stopped before you went, that should be a huge red flag, because they start by gaslighting you. At the very beginning, they start by gaslighting you. Yeah. I went to AA 5 days after I stopped. I went through detox for 5 days by myself on my own. And I believed that I stopped because of AA. Okay. So that, I'm going to leave you with that. How do people stop? They stop when they want to stop. They make that choice. So yes, in that respect, it is just a choice. Now, it may be a confusing choice because you still may really like it. You still may see high value in it. And that's where the Freedom Model comes in. Okay. Because once you don't see that value, once you've challenged all the things you believe about it, which Mark talked about, and you realize what it actually is, it loses its luster and it becomes easy to stop and it becomes easy not to go back to it. That's how people change. They change their mind.
That's it.
That's it for tonight. So, or today, whatever. Thank you, everybody. Keep the comments coming in. They really help us to figure out what we're going to talk about because we've been talking about this for 37 years.
Long time.
A long time. And even we get sick of hearing ourselves talk about it. So just so you know, the more comments we get, the more we want to talk about it.
And we will have our new coaches will be featured on the next upcoming podcasts.
Yes.
So stay tuned. Stay tuned to get introduced to our new certified coaches.
And look it, like us, share this with your friends, let people know that we're here, that we can help people to escape addiction, escape treatment, escape recovery. You can move on with your life. You can solve your problem. And if you're interested in becoming a certified freedom model coach, we now made it really easy. You can enroll at any time. We have rolling admissions. And so you can go right to thefreedommodel.org/certification, get all the information. You can also, right here on YouTube, there's a video where we talk about certification and you can see what it's all about. If that's something that might interest you, you'd be an independent coach. You'd be trained by us directly. And we now have it's very personalized classes. So wherever you are in the world, we will schedule like the live classes, the few live classes we had, we'll schedule with you on your time. That's it.
All right, everybody.
All right. Take care.